Amen. There is a real sense of God's presence just as we worship, and especially John was reading that psalm, and I was just thinking as we were reading that psalm, there's a line in there that just where the psalmist says to God, he says, "Everybody in my life just overlooks me," and he's kind of complaining to God, and he's just venting a little bit, talking about what's really going on in his heart, and I think that's something that we should be doing in church even more often, right? I think sometimes we have this idea that we got to like push that stuff down and not talk about it. But when you read the scriptures, people that had a real relationship with God, if they felt forgotten or if they felt overlooked or if they were angry, they expressed all of that to God. And so it's important to do that. And this goes along with what I want to dive into today. I also realized I've forgotten in the last month or so to mention about the offering. We don't pass the plate around anymore, and so a lot of times I forget about it. We do have a little basket at the back. You can see Jared is guarding the basket, and he will come after you if you try to take it and run. But Jared's back there. But there's also ways to give online. You can give through e-transfer. Just email the church directly, or you can give through the Tithely app if you want to use like a credit card. You can download the Tithely app, which is just Tithely. And make sure you look for Transformation Church Thunder Bay. There are other Transformation Churches. you can do that. And it's kind of cool. You'll see why. As I said, I've kind of forgot to mention the giving over the last while. And then this morning, I'm mentioning it. And it's kind of interesting because I'm going to talk about money a little bit as we talk about this. And it might be from a different perspective than you're used to. So we're going to look at, we're in this series about encounters with Jesus. And today we're going to talk about Jesus. And there's a section in the Gospel of John where Jesus has just healed a man that was blind. And the religious people are really upset at Jesus for what he did because Jesus did this on the Sabbath. And so the really religious people in those days had very strict rules about what you could do on the Sabbath. And so for Jewish people, the Sabbath started on Friday around supper, and then it would go till Saturday around supper, and you weren't allowed to do anything. And Jesus regularly healed people on the Sabbath. And so the religious people, like all the church people, would get really mad. And then typically the people that were healed by Jesus, they weren't so mad, okay? they were pretty excited about it. And usually they were kind of outsiders. Usually those guys or women that were being healed by Jesus on the Sabbath were not a part of the elite church leadership group. And so they're pretty excited about what God has done, which made the religious people even more angry and upset. Okay? And so that's the context. So Jesus is, and I want you to, this is really important. We're going to read from John chapter 10 today, and Jesus is going to make an audacious claim. He's going to say, "I'm the good shepherd." And he's also going to say something really interesting. Okay? He's going to point to all of the leadership that came before him, and he's going to say, "They're all thieves and robbers," which is a pretty bold claim, right? Like Jesus is saying, like all of those people that were in charge of the church, people that are in charge of the religious institution, he uses very strong language. He says they're all thieves and robbers, and then he uses another term. He says they're all hired hands. They're just in it for the money, which is kind of a big, bold claim, don't you think? I mean, for Jesus to say that about church leadership. And so, and if you get the church email, I mentioned this week that about deconstruction, that there's some aspects of deconstruction that Jesus actually agreed with. And so if you're not familiar with the term, I'll just give you a brief overview of what's going on. So deconstruction is the term people are using right now to walk away from the faith. And so deconstruction refers to like taking something apart. Okay, so if there's a structure that was built up, kind of like this building that's out back behind the church, I don't know if you noticed, but there's a big empty spot right there. Anybody notice that? Like it just changed the whole landscape. Well, yes, our prayer is we'd love to get that for a parking lot, but we'll pray about that later. But anyway, that used to be a great big building, and it's been deconstructed. It's no longer there. And so there's a lot of people right now that are doing that in relation to church and Christianity and the institution of the church. And the reason why people are deconstructing, some of the reasons are actually valid. And I want to make sure you hear this and that I say this carefully. But there's a lot of people that are, they're pointing to things that have been done in the church that are actually terrible things that have been done in the church. Some of the treatment from the church towards the LGBTQ community is something that people are pointing to, and they're saying the way the church has treated this community, it's just been wrong. It's been mean-spirited. It's been hateful. Or people are pointing to the fact that in the church, if you study church history, there's leaders in the church that have actually been complicit in racism, like in like treating people of other races terribly and kind of hoarding power for themselves. So these are some of the things. And if you study deconstruction at all, or if you know what's going on, you see people talking about these kinds of things. And there's people that are saying things like, I want nothing to do with the church. Because of some of the things that are going on, I want nothing to do with the church. And what's interesting is Jesus, he actually points out some of the same things in his day. So he makes this claim, and it's an audacious claim. I want you to hear this today. If Jesus is not actually God, then what he said here, what we're going to read, we should not be following him. But the reason why what he said is something we're still talking about 2,000 years later is because he rose from the dead and all of his claims were proved to be true. So one of the really bold, audacious claims that Jesus makes right here in this passage is he says, I'm the good shepherd. Like all of the things that have been done in the past, all of the terrible things that leaders have done and how they've oppressed people and how they've mistreated people, like there's a lot of those things that Jesus is saying, those were awful, they were terrible. And the people that were doing them, they were thieves and robbers or they were hired hands. So what we're going to read today, Jesus is going to, he's going to use this metaphor of sheep and how he's the shepherd. And if you know anything about sheep, sheep have to have a shepherd. They have to be cared for. They have to be taken care of, right? And sheep have a reputation for not being very smart. And so it's kind of one of those things where you read this and you're like, oh, thanks, Jesus, for saying I'm a sheep. The sheep aren't very smart, right? But what Jesus is saying is that the sheep were vulnerable. And what happens is leaders had come in and they were taking advantage of the vulnerable sheep. So he's using this metaphor and he's saying it's like a hired hand who was given the job of taking care of a flock of sheep. And then a wolf comes and the hired hand's like, I'm not getting paid enough. See you later. Right? And it's the same, and Jesus is making the same comparison. He's saying people that were in charge of caring for the people of God, sometimes tough times came and those leaders took off because they were only in it for the money. Or those leaders were only in it for the money, so they kind of used the sheep, they mistreated them, they didn't treat them well, they did terrible things. And Jesus is saying, that's awful, that's terrible. And then he makes this claim, I am the good shepherd, which is a really bold, an audacious claim. And I want to say to you today, just so you know the perspective I'm coming from, I do believe Jesus really did rise from the dead. I really believe God, that he is God in the flesh. He's fully man, he's fully God, and that Jesus came to live amongst you and I to show us what God is really like. That's why Jesus came. If you're wondering what God is like, if you wrestle through some of the things you've been taught in the church or some of the things that you've seen done, or maybe you can relate with some of the things that I'm bringing up, maybe you've been tempted to say, well, I'm going to walk away from it as well. If you're wondering what God is like, the scriptures tell us that Jesus is the exact representation of God. He is God in the flesh. And he makes this claim. He says, I am the good shepherd. And so I want to read it's John chapter 10 and the first 21 verses from that, and it'll be up on the screen. And I'm just going to pray before I do, because it would be easy for me to get in the way today, and my desire is that you would hear what God has to say to you. I think that this subject is a touchy one, it's a difficult one, it's a challenging one, and I don't want you to just see my perspective. I'd rather you hear from Jesus, because also in this is a part one, by the way. So next week I'm going to continue this on. But Jesus says something in here. He says, "My sheep know my voice." This is one of my favorite scriptures because it's the thing that probably one of the things I long for more than any other thing in this life is just to hear the voice of Jesus. Everybody else's voices, sometimes I find it really confusing. I find the voice in my own head confusing sometimes. But Jesus here, he says, my sheep, those that are my true followers, they actually know my voice. He speaks. And so my desire, my prayer this morning is that you'd hear him. So I'll pray, and then we'll read this passage. Lord, I just want to thank you for your word, and I thank you for this message today. Lord, I think that it's something all of us need to hear, myself included, that you are our good shepherd. And all of us can probably think of examples of people that did not represent you well, or things that were done in your name that would have actually grieved you. But Lord, then there's some times where we were challenged and we didn't like it, and we get mad about that. And I just pray that this morning we would actually hear your voice, and that we would actually come to a deeper understanding of what you're like and what you're saying, and empower us, Lord, by your Spirit to be able to follow you, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen. So John chapter 10, starting in verse 1, he says, "I tell you the truth, anyone who sneaks over the wall of a sheepfold rather than going through the gate must surely be a thief and a robber. But the one who enters through the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep recognize his voice and come to him. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. After he has gathered his own flock, he walks ahead of them, and they follow him because they know his voice. They won't follow a stranger. They will run from him because they don't know his voice." And so this is just the metaphor, the illustration Jesus is using. He's describing something that would have been really well known to the people of the day. Here's how a shepherd interacts with his sheep. And I love how people that were with Jesus often responded. So those who had heard Jesus use this illustration didn't understand what he meant, which happened a lot with Jesus, okay? So if sometimes you're reading the scriptures or you're listening to a sermon and you feel like you're not understanding something, you're in good company. A lot of the people that wrote the scriptures and wrote the story of Jesus, they felt the same way. Like, what did you just say? What does that mean? What does that mean for my life? What does that mean for the world, right? So they didn't understand what he meant, so he explained. I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. All who came before me were thieves and robbers, but the true sheep did not listen to them. Yes, I am the gate. Those who come in through me will be saved. They will come and go freely and will find good pastures. This verse 10, it's powerful. He says, the thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. And then Jesus says, my purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. Like right there, Jesus sums up the whole purpose of his ministry, the whole purpose of him coming and interacting with us here. He says, my purpose is to give them, my sheep, those who listen to my voice, those who follow me, my purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. Do you have a rich and satisfying life? Like, would you testify that that is true? I think a lot of us, some of us would. Some of us probably wrestle. And we're like, man, I don't know that I do have a rich and satisfying life. Maybe some of us wrestle wondering whether or not God actually wants us to have a rich and satisfying life. You know, I meet a lot of people that they think, like, being a Christian just means, like, the most boring existence imaginable, right? And that's totally not what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying here, the purpose. He isn't just saying, I want you to have a rich and satisfying life. He says, my very purpose, the reason that I left heaven, the reason I became a man, God in the flesh, was to give my sheep a rich and satisfying life. Verse 11, he continues, says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd sacrifices his life for the sheep. A hired hand will run when he sees a wolf coming. He will abandon the sheep because they don't belong to him, and he isn't their shepherd. And so the wolf attacks them and scatters the flock. The hired hand runs away because he's working only for the money, and he doesn't really care about the sheep. Have you ever encountered a leader like that, where you felt like they were in it with wrong motives? Maybe it wasn't because they just cared for the money, but maybe there was like some self-interest there or some things that were done in God's name that you just felt were wrong. Maybe you can relate with the psalm that we read earlier, that John read from the drum set, right? Where the guy says, everybody overlooks me. Nobody really cares, right? And Jesus is saying here, he's acknowledging the fact that sometimes there's leaders that have actually claimed to be leaders in God's house over God's people, that their motives are wrong. And Jesus is saying, but have no fear. I'm the good shepherd. I actually lay my life down for the sheep. Verse 14, I am the good shepherd. I know my own sheep and they know me. Just as my Father knows me and I know the Father, so I sacrifice my life for the sheep. Jesus is a bit repetitive here. He wants you to get it. Like, I actually give my life up for you. I love you so much that I'll lay down my life for your sake. Like, I'll take all of that suffering, all of that shame, all of that evil on myself so you can have freedom. I sacrifice my life for the sheep. Verse 16, I have other sheep too that are not in this sheepfold. I must bring them also. They will listen to my voice, and there will be one flock with one shepherd. The Father loves me because I sacrifice my life so I can take it back again. You seeing the theme here? Jesus is continually saying, like, I lay my life down. I sacrifice my life for those that I love. Nobody can take my life from me. I sacrifice it voluntarily. For I have the authority to lay it down when I want to, and I also to take it up again. For this is what my Father has commanded. And that, I love verse 19. It's just real. When he said these things, people were divided again in their opinions about him. You know that division was happening 2,000 years ago when Jesus was walking around? Like, a lot of times people were like saying, man, I just wish we could go back to when I was with Jesus. And even when Jesus was teaching in person, he had just healed a man that was born blind. He had just done this incredible, miraculous healing. And then he's giving this awesome teaching. And he does the teaching and people leave upset and angry at each other, right? Like, so the division, like that kind of thing goes on amongst people because we're human. And Jesus is saying, but just come to me. I'm the good shepherd. Some said he's demon-possessed and out of his mind. Why listen to a man like that? Others said, this doesn't sound like a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? So they were divided over him. And so I think you get the idea. So Jesus is saying, he's comparing the people of God to sheep. Okay, so the people that are trying to be followers of God, trying to live according to the commands and laws of God, trying to follow him, okay, they're like the sheep. And Jesus is saying, he actually says two things in this, if you noticed it. First, he says, I'm the gate. Okay, so in order to get to God, you have to go through me, is what he's saying. So he compares himself to like the gate of the sheepfold. So if a sheepfold was all square or rectangular, the gate is the only way the sheep can get in. And Jesus is saying, I'm like that gate. The only way to get into God is through me. But then he also says, I'm the good shepherd. And when he's talking about being a shepherd, he points out the fact that people that are in positions of leadership sometimes, they claim to be speaking on behalf of God. But there's a lot of examples of people that have been speaking on behalf of God that have done really terrible things and have hurt people. And Jesus is addressing that, and he wants us to trust him. And so, in verse 8, Jesus makes this claim. He says, all who came before me were thieves and robbers, but the true sheep did not listen to them. So I told you I'd use the example of money. Money is one of these things in the church that sometimes when it's talked about in a really terrible way, or the things that have been done with money have been terrible. I've read stories of older women that were really vulnerable. Their husbands had died, and they weren't super connected with a local church, and they're connected to like these televangelists. And there's crazy stories of women that have like signed over all of their their estate after they died, and they'd given up everything and having a hard time eating, and they're giving all their money to like a televangelist that promises if you give money to this ministry, God's going to bless you. And there's some really like terrible, even court cases of families of people that have done this that have said, this is horrible. How could these really powerful televangelists be taking advantage of such vulnerable people? And so, and that's grievous. I want you to know, like, those are the kinds of things that grieve the heart of God. God hates seeing that kind of corruption. But Jesus, if you read the teaching of Jesus, Jesus actually talks about money more than he talks about almost anything else. Talks about it a lot. And he actually tells us to be generous and to give our money. And so as a Jesus follower, there's been times in my life with Vicky where before I went to Bible school, we were working in this place and trying to do ministry and we weren't making a lot of money. And I remember one time coming out of the grocery store and not really having enough money to buy the groceries that we had bought, but also in my mind, like knowing that Jesus wants me to be generous with my money. And I've always believed in tithing. Like I grew up I was taught that you should tithe, you should give to the Lord. And so I remember there's some specific times in my life where God just really challenged Vicky and I to give even when we felt like we couldn't afford it. And I can just tell you that God is faithful. And the way that he's provided for us over the years has just been mind-blowing to me. But I've also seen teaching that's been really kind of self-motivated and not very kind towards people. And so when it comes to money, it's a touchy subject because a lot of people have this feeling that, like, well, the church is just all about money. There's all these selfish motives and there's all these wrong reasons. And there's a lot of truth to that. But what I want to encourage you to do, and when I close, I'm going to bring it back to this. Like, whatever you do in obedience to God, like, make sure that your motive is to do it to be obedient to him, not because of the shame you feel like you're going to have from the other people in the church community, or not because you feel pressured by human beings to do something. Like, whatever you do, do it as an act of worship to God, even if it's sacrificial. But also recognize that there are people that, in the name of God, have taken advantage of some of the truths of Scripture with selfish motives and selfish reasons. But don't, whatever, like, and I can't stress this enough, don't allow that to be the reason why you say, well, I'm just going to throw it all away because the whole institution, the whole church, the whole faith is just corrupt. There is corruption, and Jesus actually points out corruption very seriously. But if you want to be a Jesus follower, I just want to encourage you, don't allow the corruption that you've seen or been exposed to be a reason why you say, well, no, I'm not going to do these things. Like, act in obedience to God, in trust for him, and listen for his voice and for how he's leading you. He really is faithful. And so I want to read a passage. So in the Old Testament, I want to do a little bit of church history today, and so I hope you can track with me because this is really important. This theme is something I want you to see because it's something God has spoken about a lot over the centuries. And so I'm going to give you two sort of history lessons. I want to look in the Old Testament for where God prophetically tells his people, if you put somebody in a position of power over you, they will abuse you. Okay? And then how that happened throughout history. And then in church history, I want to give you an example of one of the first times a very powerful person claimed to be a Christian, and there was some really negative effects because of it. But in the Old Testament, and this will just be a refresher if you know some of the Old Testament history, but one of the first people that became a God follower, one of the first people that was like in the flock of God, was Abraham. Okay, so Abraham, he's known as the father of the faith. He was the first person to just put his trust and his faith in God. God called him and said, Abraham, I'm going to, through you, I'm going to give you descendants that, like, there's going to be more than the stars in the sky, more than the sand on the seashore. And through you, there's going to be a people who will be the people of God. And so Abraham was alive at a time where there's all kinds of corruption everywhere and people not following God and people doing all kinds of horrible things. And God says, Abraham, like, I'm going to send you somewhere to a land you've never been, and you're going to trust me, and then I'm going to birth a nation through you. And these people, they're actually going to bless the whole world. Okay, so Abraham held on to this promise, and he actually, in his lifetime, didn't even get to see this fulfilled. So God gives Abraham a promise that he didn't see fulfilled even in his lifetime. That's something. I'm not going to spend too much time on that today, but sometimes God puts hope in our hearts for things that we don't see, and that can be really challenging, that can be really difficult. But when God says something, he always fulfills it. So God called Abraham. Jacob was Abraham's grandson, okay? Jacob had 12 sons, and at a time where there was a really severe famine, Jacob listened to one of his sons named Joseph, and he ended up in Egypt. Okay, so when Jacob went to Egypt with these people that God had promised would one day become this great nation, there was like 70 of them, they get to Egypt, and they're there for 400 years, and things get really bad. Okay, so the people that, you know, they went to Egypt, there was like 70 of them. They had this promise from the great, from grandfather Abraham of one day being this great nation, this great people of God. And they're in Egypt, and the Egyptians start to rule and make them slaves. They oppress the people of God, okay? And so it's this really difficult time. This went on for 400 years. And actually, you imagine for 400 years having this promise that you're the people of God, but you're enslaved under a really powerful, oppressive group of people. And so many people lived and died during these 400 years. And then God raises up Moses to liberate the people. After Moses, God raised up Joshua, and he took the people into the promised land. And so this is the first time that this people group were entering into this land that God promised them. And they had all of this hope of they were going to be the people of God. They were going to be God's flock. And after they get into the promised land, the people were rebellious, and they refused to submit to God. And so God raised up judges. And so if you're familiar with the names Samson and Deborah and Gideon and Shemgar. And then the last of these judges to be raised up was Samuel. And so this is really important. I want to read to you a passage from the Old Testament. Samuel, he's a leader of the people of God, but he's a different kind of leader. He's the kind of leader that God speaks to him directly. Samuel is known as a prophet, and God would give him specific messages for the people of God. Samuel didn't have power like a king would have power. or like a powerful church institution would have power. He had power because God was speaking directly to him, and he was giving messages for the people. And so what was happening, and this is if you're not familiar with biblical history, this you got to catch this. The people, they had this plot of land that they had started to inhabit, and the people of Israel started looking around at other nations, and they were saying, you know, all the other nations around us, they have a king. They have an official government structure, and they follow that king, and that king helps them to form rules and laws and systems, and they become powerful, strong nations. We want to be like that. And so what was happening was the people of Israel, they went to Samuel, this prophet, and they said, Samuel, we want to be like the other nations. We want to have like a king that rules over us. We want to have a king that's in charge. And Samuel was grieved by this because he was saying, you have this special relationship with God. Like, you're not like other nations. You have a relationship with God where God gives me a direct word. I give it to you, and you hear from him. You're his people. He cares for you. He looks after you. And they said, no, like, yeah, that's great. We're tired of that. We just want a king. And so God gives this warning through Samuel about what's going to happen if they do go ahead and get a king. And that's going to read to you, and this will be up on the screen. This is 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 10 through 22. And so just listen close. I know there's some history here. But I want you to catch what's going on, because God actually warns the people of what will come, and we're still living under the effects of that in some ways today, but Jesus is calling us out of that to be his people. And so in 1 Samuel chapter 8, starting verse 10, it says, "So Samuel passed on the Lord's warning to the people who were asking him for a king. This is how a king will reign over you, Samuel said. The king will draft your sons and assign them to his chariots and his charioteers, making them run before his chariots. Some will be generals and captains in his army. Some will be forced to plow in his fields and harvest his crops. And some will make his weapons and chariot equipment. The king will take your daughters from you and force them to cook and bake and make perfumes for him. He will take away the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his own officials. He will take a tenth of your grain and your grape harvest and distribute it among his officers and attendants. He will take your male and female slaves for his own use. He will demand a tenth of your flocks, and you will be his slaves. When that day comes, you will beg for relief from this king you are demanding, but the Lord will not help you. The people refused to listen to Samuel's warning. Even so, we still want a king, they said. We want to be like the nations around us. Our king will judge us and lead us into battle. So Samuel repeated to the Lord what the people had said, and the Lord replied, do as they say, give them a king, and then Samuel agreed and sent the people home. So this is really important for you to understand. At this time in history, the people of God, they were like a unique group of people in the earth. They heard messages that were directly from God. God cared for them. They were like his flock. And they said, we want to be like everybody else. We want to be like all the other nations. We want to have a king. We want to have a government system over us just like everybody else. And God warned them. He said, if you put people in positions of power over you, they will abuse you. They will mistreat you. There will be selfish motive on the part of the leaders and the kings. They will do things to you that are going to be hurtful. They're going to cause pain for you and your family. You know, it talks about the daughters and the sons. And the people said, no, we want this. This is what we want. And then so if you read the rest of Old Testament history, you see example after example after example of leaders that were like, some of them were godly in the sense that they trusted God, but they did terrible things in the name of God. Okay, and so, and I can't go into all of the different examples in the prophetic writings, but there's lots of examples of God raising up prophets that would angrily call out all of these people that were doing things in the name of God in wrong ways. If you read Isaiah and read Jeremiah, like they were so mad because they were saying, like, they would call out these leaders. They said, you're doing things in the name of God that God hates. You're mistreating his people. You're not caring for them. You're not loving them the way that God loves them. That's what their message was. And so then Jesus comes on the scene, okay, and I want to give you a little bit of church history today. Jesus comes on the scene, and he starts like this new group of people, okay? So he gathers a group of followers. He tells them about who he is. He prophesies that he's going to go to the cross. He goes to the cross. He dies for the sins of the world, and then he's raised up again just like he prophesied. At the end of his ministry, he's got a really small group of people that are his followers. There's like 120 of them, okay? And before he ascends into heaven, he gives them this job. He says, now go spread this message to the world. And what he wants, what he's saying is like, this message is a message that's going to gather people in, gather my flock in, and they're going to be my people because they hear my voice, they follow me, they follow the leading of God and of his Holy Spirit. And so church history is really interesting because this 120 people, within 300 years, they grew to a movement of millions of people. And if you study this history, it is actually fascinating how this took place. So in the first 300 years of Christianity, you got to understand this. They didn't have a Bible like you and I have. They weren't able to carry around this book with the teachings of Jesus. They were just listening to the teaching of the apostles. They were listening to the eyewitness accounts of what Jesus had done. And this movement actually started to grow. But it was a movement of people that they, like, none of them had any reputation. Most of them were like of like they were on the lowest ladder of like social status in their day, but it started to spread, and the Romans, okay, the empire of the time tried to stamp it out. They tried to destroy this movement of Christianity before it even took off. And so there's gonna be a picture on the screen. These guys, by the way, these Roman emperors, they didn't take selfies back then. So all we have are these replicas of what they probably looked like, okay? So this guy, Diocletian, before Christianity became the official religion of Rome, this guy, Diocletian, was an emperor in Rome, and he tried to, like, destroy Christianity. And his intent wasn't actually necessarily just to kill Christians. Like, he did that. Because of what he did, Christians were killed. But his goal was to just stamp Christianity out. And this might be a big concept, but I want you to get this. So his job is to lead an empire, okay? And so the emperors, the Roman empires, what they wanted to do was they wanted to have a kingdom that was powerful and that where they could rule over the world. And Christianity was just annoying because the thing that the Christians were doing that the Romans hated was Christians were saying things like, Jesus is Lord. And the Romans are like, this doesn't work. Like, you have to see Caesar as Lord. If we're going to be powerful, you have to recognize that Caesar is Lord. You have to give your allegiance to us. They tried to stamp out Christianity. But it wouldn't work. Christians were dying joyfully. They were letting themselves be martyred and killed for the faith. And the Roman emperors were getting angry. They were upset about it because they're like, what? Like, we can't stamp this out. So the next guy that comes along, and this will be the next slide. Again, selfies weren't invented yet. So this is our lookalike of Constantine, okay? So Constantine, in the early 300s, okay? So this is like 300 years after Jesus' resurrection. Constantine, he's the first emperor of Rome that gets up and he says, I'm a Christian. He claims that he had this vision, okay, and if you want to go and study history, you can, but he claims that he has this vision of Jesus and he becomes a Christian. And then he takes Christianity and he links it up with his powerful army, and they go out, Rome goes out, and they have this amazing military victory. They kill all kinds of people. But do you know what Constantine did? He united the Christian faith with military force. I've wrestled with this. Okay, so I've told you before that when I was in Bible school, this is one of the things that I studied. I studied Constantine, and this is like the first time that Christianity gets mixed with power. Do you understand what I mean? It's like Christianity is like married to power. Okay, so in the first 300 years of Christianity, the people had no reputation. They were kind of annoying to the Roman Empire. But when Constantine says, I'm a Christian, and he starts moving in the direction of declaring Rome a Christian empire, it started to mix Christianity with power. All of a sudden, Christians started getting tax benefits. Like some of the leaders in the church, they got tax breaks, tax benefits. They had buildings that they could meet, that the government said you could meet in these buildings. All of a sudden, the Christians started to have like this prestige. They started to be looked at like, man, you guys are kind of in. And you know what was going on was that Rome, they figured out, they're like, what if we take Christianity and we use it to like unite our empire, and we'll use Christianity to get the people of Rome to agree on something, and then we'll have this powerful force and we can continue to dominate and we continue to have control. And then you know what started to happen was that people before, so in the year 200, if you became a Christian, you might lose your job. You could be killed for being a Christian. But in the year like 350, after Constantine and after these emperors started saying, hey, we're gonna declare Rome a Christian nation, you started to be looked at like with some respect. All of a sudden, it was kind of cool to be a Christian. It was politically acceptable. It was politically a good thing. And the reason I wanted to point this out is that when power mixes with Christianity, there's bad things happen. Because all of a sudden you've got leaders that they're not leaders because they love the people of God. They're leaders because of this position they have, this prestige they have. That's one of the things that God in the scriptures speaks against a lot, is leaders that are in the positions they're in and they've got selfish motives and they mistreat the people of God. That's one of the things that Jesus pointed out. And he said, this has happened before, and Jesus knew this is going to happen again. But he said, but there are a group of people that are truly my followers. They hear my voice. They're not taken in by the things of the world. And Jesus declares, he says, I am the good shepherd. And so there's a lot of things. Since the time of Constantine, there's a lot of things that have been done in the name of God. There's been terrible things. The church has been a part of things that are absolutely horrible and that Jesus is angry about, that God is saying those things are not good, because there's this mixture of like power and faith, and the motives are mixed all over the place. And what Jesus is saying is he's saying, like, don't let that distract you. Don't let that be something that takes you away from the faith. Recognize what he's saying. He says, I am the good shepherd. Like when I give you a command, over and over, I pointed it out, all through the passage we read, Jesus says, I lay my life down for the sheep. People that are obsessed with power, people that do things with selfish motives, they don't care about the people of God. They don't care about you or me or our souls. They care about their own reputation, or they care about their own comfort. Jesus is saying, like, I'm different. I'm a different kind of a leader. I actually lay my life down for the sheep. You know, I said at the beginning, some of the reasons people have walked away from the church or deconstructed is some of the racism that has been in the church, or the treatment of LGBTQ community or whatever it is. When Jesus speaks about sin, and I want to be clear on this, he calls sin, sin. Jesus doesn't beat around the bush when it comes to sin. But he doesn't use his position of power to shame people with human shame or to try to control people for the sake of gaining control. When he speaks truth, it comes from the deepest place of love that exists in the universe. Like, so when Jesus calls sin, sin, we talked about sin last week, there's no selfish motive in Jesus. He's not trying to gather all kinds of people to follow him so he can build this powerful empire. He said his purpose is that you and I would have a rich and satisfying life. So when Jesus speaks about something and calls it sin, his love for you, his desire for you is deeper than anything you've ever experienced on this planet, deeper than anything you ever will experience on this planet. So you're gonna come across some things in Scripture that make you uncomfortable, that you don't like. Jesus will call things sin that you're like, is that a sin? Or does he really want me to do that? You have to realize the purpose, he says it in this chapter, my purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. So when Jesus says something to you, when he challenges you with something, there's no oppression on his part. There's no desire for control, for selfish motives. There's none of that. His desire is that you would have a rich and satisfying life with the creator of the universe. As a follower of Jesus, I've come to trust that. As I've studied the scriptures and I've listened to some of the things Jesus has said, like there's things that make me struggle and I go, God, is that really what you mean? Is that really what you say? Do I have to believe that? But at the end of the day, I come to, like, I don't see any other example in all of the world of a leader like Jesus. There's nobody who's got that kind of love. There's nobody who actually desires that I would have a rich and satisfying life. And even if you're tempted by, you know, some of the things that are going on with deconstruction, or you're tempted by walking away from the faith, there's so many stories of people that have walked away from the church because of, you know, they've been hurt, and they join this a movement or a people group, and they're hurt even more because we're tempted sometimes to put our trust or our hope in people. And what Jesus is saying here is he's saying, you can't trust people or human institutions. You've got to trust me. I'm the good shepherd. I just want to give a story, and then I'm going to invite the team to come up. I love Jesus, and if you've been around here, you know that. When I was in high school, and I've always, for some reason, at a young age, God opened up the door for me to be a leader in different groups that I was a part of. And when I was in high school, there was a friend of mine who was not a follower of Jesus, and I led this person to Christ. They started coming to my Bible study at my house. We used to meet in the shed out back behind my house. It was a pretty rugged place, actually. Literally, it was a shed. And we would like pack out every week. And this person, this friend that I made, became a Jesus follower. They ended up coming with me on a mission trip, and it was awesome. I did something that really hurt this person, like really hurt them. And they told me what it was that I had done. And I remember when I was told about what I had done, there was nothing I could say in defense. I realized I was totally foolish. I was stupid in what I did. Well, this person didn't talk to me for like 10 years. And it bothered me for those whole 10 years because I had apologized, but it didn't make it any better. And of course it didn't, because what I had done was really hurtful. 10 years later, this person reached out, wrote me a letter, and thanked me for how God used me in their life to lead them to Christ. I was able to see that person this summer when I was back on the East Coast. It was really, really cool. The point is, I don't know why, but God used me in this person's life to lead them to Christ. But I ended up being like one of those leaders Jesus is talking about. Like I had done something that was hurtful to them. As a pastor, as like a leader who wants you to know Jesus, I've realized like I'm human. If you look at me as the example of what it means to be a Jesus follower, at some point, I'll let you down. And Jesus is saying that. He's saying that here. He's saying, like, there will be hurt. Bad things will happen in leadership. I'm the good shepherd. And so as your pastor today, if you're tuning in online, you don't consider me your pastor, what my challenge to you is to recognize that Jesus is the ultimate good shepherd. He'll call you to serve under people and be a part of a church where things will be good or not good at certain times. But just recognize, like, your true shepherd, the one you really follow, it's Jesus. It's not a person. It's not me. People will let you down. You know, I've got heroes of the faith that some of them have really let me down in some ways. And what God has had to remind me is like, well, the things that they did for you that were helpful, that was me. That was my spirit. But look beyond that person and recognize God. I'm just going to invite the team to come up. And we're going to close with a couple songs. And I just want to encourage you, I in no way in this message, I don't want to put a thought in your mind where you're like, well, I'm just going to go be a rebel and the church is bad. If anything, I just want us to be honest about some of the things that have been done, some of the terrible things that have even been done in God's name, but for that to actually unite us even more and to recognize that together we make up this group of sheep that are in God's family and that he's the shepherd that we're following. And if you can recognize that Jesus is your true shepherd, and if you really endeavor to hear his voice and submit yourself to his spirit, you will hear him. He's gentle. He's loving. He's kind. I don't know if I put this up on the screen or not, but I'm going to read this before we sing these last couple songs. It's Matthew 11, 28 to 30. I think I actually forgot to put it on there. But Jesus says, "Come to me, all who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light."